Tuzmai Shi Gurve Namaha. Namashastra Bichara Nakanipano Sadharma Sam Stapago Lokanam Hitakar No Tribune Manyo Shivanyukaro. So, of course, that verse is one of the verses spoken by Srinivasacharya, written by Srinivasacharya, glorifying the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. And the six Goswamis of Vrindavan were assigned by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to excavate the holy places and also establish the principles of devotional service. And specifically, today we're talking about Śrīla Rūpa Goswami, who is, in one sense, the most prominent, as far as we're concerned, in our Sampradaya coming up to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because we are called, according to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Rupanugas, or according to Prabhupada, Rupanugas. And we have this famous verse, Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gada Mayam Dadati Swapadantikam. That Rupa Goswami, and of course all the other Goswamis, but specifically in this verse we find Rupa Goswami's name, that Rupa Goswami understood Manobhishtam, the desires of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that's very interesting, because if one wants to serve someone, it's very important to understand one's internal mood. And it's a second-class servant is able to serve by being told what to do, but a first-class servant, he serves because he knows what the master wants. So we're supposed to become first-class servants, and Rupa Goswami is certainly a first-class servant. And he wrote the law book, which is the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which Prabhupada translated roughly as the Nectar of Devotion. And Prabhupada said this is the law book for the Krishna consciousness movement. In other words, the law book, maybe not the law book of how to make the GBC and stuff like that. That's not what we're talking about. But the law book, insofar as sadhana bhakti and then bhava bhakti and prema, how to internally or personally progress in devotional service. You know, really gives us the different steps, the different problems in the material world, if you're not a devotee, and the benefits of devotional service, how to perform it properly, what's improper performance, how to identify good emotions, how to identify bad emotions, you know, just to analyze emotions, and then what is pure devotional service ultimately, in the mood of the gopis in Vrindavan. Okay, so in that light, we're going to talk about the introduction to the Nectar Devotion today, and we may get on to the first chapter. So in the introduction, written by Śrīla Rūpa Goswami, because I'm referring also to the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, this is based on a course I've given a number of years ago, and you know, recently too, on the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and the Nectar Devotion. Because Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, of course, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu means, bhakti means devotion, rasa means like a taste, amrita, like the nectar. The nectar taste, sindhu, ocean, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, means the ocean of nectarian tastes, of love. So that's the nectar of devotion. So anyway, so Śrīla Rūpa Goswami starts in his introduction, which Śrīla Prabhupāda summarizes, by something called the Mangala Charana. Now, that's very interesting. Mangala means auspicious. So it's an auspicious chant. And before reciting any Vedic literatures, we're always supposed to have some sort of auspicious invocation. And some devotees, when they give Bhagavatam for class, for example, they go through several lines of the Mangala Charana, like Om Ganat, Vinanda Shah, Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam, and then some of the other verses. Whereas some devotees do it a little shorter. It's not that one way is right, one way is wrong. But there has to be some sort of Mangala Charana. In the Bhagavatam, of course, we do Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Some devotees do Nasta Prayeshu, Abhadrayeshu, Nichum Bhagavata Sevya. I just follow basically Prabhupada's process where he just did Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Prabhupada was rather simple in his Mangala Charana. Anyway, so Rupa Goswami's Mangalacharna is as follows. Now, the first verse, there's six verses, actually, in the Mangalacharna and the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And he defines the objective of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and offers obeisances. Mm-hmm. And so the first verse, actually, is a very interesting verse. It's Akila Rasamrita Burti Rasmara Ruchi Ritaraka Pali Kalita Shyama Lalita Radha Prayan Vidur Jayati. And it's a very beautiful verse. Rupa Goswami is renowned for his poetry. There's one particular presentation I could do if I had time, which I'm not going to have time, where we can show how Rupa Goswami's poetry is so precise, elaborate, and he's such a genius that he's written poetry that can be read backwards and forwards the same way, crossways the same way, makes a chakra and it can read the same way. Has anyone seen this presentation?
Yeah.
You've seen the presentation. Where'd you see it?
Ariel gave it at the loft.
At the loft, yeah. But the temple, it hasn't been done. No. Anyway, it's a whole PowerPoint presentation. It's very interesting. So Rupa Goswami is a genius. So here's some of his poetry. Let Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, be glorified. By virtue of his expanding, attractive features, he subjugated the gopis named Taraka and Pali and absorbed Shama and Lalita. He is the most attractive lover of Srimati Radharani and the reservoir of pleasure for all devotional mellows. So he's defining his worshipable deity in the first verse. Second verse, he states, although I am the lowest of men and have no knowledge, the inspiration to write transcendental literatures about devotional service has been mercifully bestowed upon me. Therefore, I am offering my obeisances at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has given me a chance to write these books. And in the third verse, he offers obeisances to his spiritual master. That's Sanatana Goswami, of course. Fourth verse, he offers obeisances to all great devotees and acharyas who are compared to sharks in the great ocean of nectar who do not care for the various rivers of liberation. So that's interesting. I should describe a little bit about that. Because liberation, does anyone know how many types of liberation there are?
Five.
He's a good reader. Such a new devotee, you know, he's absorbed a lot. He just has to watch out for false pride. So so the five types of liberation, what are the five types of liberation? Someone else, please.
Same
living on the same planet.
Having the same form.
Having the same form. Sarupya. Salokya, Sarupya. That's merging. Sayuja. The same opulence as the Lord. Associating with the Lord, yeah. Samipya. So these are the five types. So obviously the devotee rejects which one? Sayuja. Because Prabhupada Saraswati, one of Lord Chaitanya's followers, said, Kaivalya Natakayate. That means merging into the existence, or you can't actually merge, but thinking you're merging is hell. Because there's nothing for you to do. It's just like doing nothing and being bored. Anyway, so that's hellish. The devotee will accept the other four types of liberation, but he doesn't ask for them. So then my question to all of you is, why did Prabhupada say we should pray to go back to Godhead? If Rupa Goswami says, and the acharyas say, we shouldn't ask for liberation, then why did Prabhupada say we should ask for liberation? Any ideas?
Because they're not pure devotees.
Go elaborate on that a little bit more.
Because we have to have some desire in Krishna consciousness, and we need to know that the material world is a horrible place.
Yeah, so in the beginning stage, it's not enough to say, you know, I just want to be a pure devotee. It's because you don't. Krishna understands too in the Bhagavad Gita that you come to Krishna consciousness for four basic reasons. You know, you're looking for wealth, you're inquisitive, you're in distress, or you're looking for knowledge. Chatur Vidha Bhajanti Mam. So therefore, we need a little impetus other than just be a pure devotee. Just love Krishna. Although, you know, we'd like to think the best about ourselves, but that's not really accurate. Isn't it? We actually think more of ourselves than is reality. Thinking, you know, I'm just a pure devotee of the Lord. But, you know, sometimes I go to the movies. Sometimes I speak prajalpa, sometimes, but I'm a pure devotee. People just don't know my heart. I mean, you hear this sometimes from devotees. People don't understand how much I love Krishna. But it's in my heart, I love Krishna. Well, if you love Krishna, you wouldn't be doing those things. Anyways, certain things. So, therefore, we need some other intermediate goals. How to get liberated. And so Prabhupada encouraged that you should ask for liberation. Of course, pure devotional service is devoid of that, which we're going to describe in a second. It's all from the introduction. So rivers of liberation. Fifth verse ascribes the benedictions and the protection of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He prays that the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu will be protected from argumentative logicians. You know, in other words, mental speculators. He compares mental speculators' arguments and logic to volcanic eruptions in the midst of the ocean. They don't do any harm. So that's the first five verses. And then in the sixth verse, he gives obeisances to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and also describes himself as completely incompetent. Okay. And that's the first portion of the introduction. Second portion gets a little more interesting. It's called the Grantha Vibhaga, which basically means the divisions of the scripture. And those are 7 to 9 verses, and I'm going to talk about those divisions because this is very interesting insofar as Prabhupada's description too. So he says in the ocean of devotional service, there's how many directions?
Four.
And those directions are what?
North, south.
Well, you start in a different direction. Start. Where's the sun rise from?
East.
And then you go clockwise. South.
Of course, west.
Here you still do clockwise the same way in this section of the world? Things aren't upside down. You know, clocks go in the other direction. But anyway. So you go clockwise. You go east, south, west, north. And so he goes through these different directions, and within each and every one of these different directions, there's different waves. There's a first wave, second wave, third wave, and sometimes there's up to nine waves. In other words, 9 topics dealt with. So he's very poetic in his description, comparing the ocean of devotional service to all these different directions and the waves in the ocean, and also the pure devotees who swim in the waves. They're the sharks. Remember the previous verse? He talked about the sharks. The sharks, especially the great white shark. And also Tim and Gila fish. Nobody could interfere with them. In other words, they're enjoying. They're like surfing in the waves. Of course, the material surfers Prabhupada called sufferers. And that's actually what they are. I mean, they just wait for the perfect wave, and they think they get a rush of adrenaline, and they think that this is enjoyment, and then it's all over. Useless. Actually, I was just reading this. What was this book? National Geographic, about the biggest wave ever. It was like a 50-meter wave.
Wow.
It was off the coast, I think, of Portugal. Portugal. Sarah, I remember all this nonsense. Anyway, so how do you know these things? You've read it too.
Yeah.
So off the coast of Portugal, the wave is just, can you imagine, 50 meters high?
That's it.
And this idiot. is riding the wave and thinking that's enjoyment. But the devotees, the pure devotees, are actually riding the waves eternally, and they're not risking their lives by doing that. Okay, so let's talk about the different sections just to give an idea of what we're going to be dealing with. Of course, the first portion is the first section. So the eastern section right now, that's what we start with in the Nectar Devotion. And this is the describes the different types of bhakti. Excuse me. Does someone have some water? I can drink. So, the first wave is like the overview of what bhakti is. And we're going to talk about Rupa Goswami's nutshell verse in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu in a second. That's Anyavi Lashita Shunyam Yanakarma Navritam Anukulyena Krishnana Shilanam Bhakti Rutabham. I'm going to describe that. But there's an overview of what bhakti is, a description of what bhakti is. Bhakti is different than just the word puja or love in the material world or worship. You know, bhakti, basically the word bhakti means to serve someone with unalloyed love, to do what they want. And as Lord Chaitanya talks about, let's put it over there, not near the electronics. As Lord Chaitanya talks about in the Shikshashika, the final verse, that Krishna, you may crush me by your embrace, you may leave me brokenhearted by not being present before me, but you're completely free to do anything and everything. I mean, that's really what bhakti is. And if you're not at that stage, you're not experiencing pure bhakti. You're experiencing some mixture. Like karma misra bhakti or jnana misra bhakti. Jnana misra means you want to get liberated or you want knowledge or something like that. But karma misra bhakti means, like Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj was engaged in karma misra bhakti. That means bhakti mixed with a desire for fruitive gain. And so, but actually bhakti means pure bhakti anyway. So that's the first wave, describes the overview of bhakti. The second wave describes the three different branches that are of sadhana bhakti, of sadhana bhakti. Sadhana means practice, and those are vaidhi and raganuga. Vaidhi means you're practicing according to the rules, and raganuga means you're practicing spontaneously, and also you've begun to recognize your spiritual identity and a particular resident of Vrindavan whom you serve or follow in the footsteps of. In other words, like if someone comes to the proper stage, then they may think, well, I should be a servant of Subal, for example, or Sudam, or Mother Yashoda, or Lalita, or Vishaka, any one of these residents of Vrindavan, who are called Ragatmaka devotees. Actually, it's good tomorrow if the devotees bring some notepads so they can take notes, because I'm giving some terms that are important. Prabhupada said if you write things down, you remember them. So, because I'm giving terms, it's important to cement this in our consciousness. So, ragatmaka devotee means the devotee whose atma is rag. You know, rag is like the intense desire to serve and be with Krishna and give Krishna enjoyment. So that's their very atma. Atma means the self. Their very atma is rag. So they're called ragatmika devotees. So under the raganuga sadhana, it's still practice, it's not perfection, then one serves internally a ragatmika devotee. But that has to be verified by interactions with the spiritual master. It's not that we just decide upon it ourselves. You know, we just decide, well, I'm a gopi. And, I mean, just like I've been putting together a course right now in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Jiva Dharma. And it's very interesting how these different devotees, I'm speaking about two in particular, Vijay Kumar and Brajanath. Anyone here read Jiva Dharma here? No. But anyway, this book summarizes the whole essence or the process of devotional service utilizing different stories. And one story is these two devotees, Brajanath and Vijay Kumar, they approach the guru, and they both have different spiritual inclinations as far as Raghunuga Bhakti is concerned. So the guru talks privately to one, and not in front of the other one, because it's not appropriate for the other one to hear about those particular things. Anyway. So that's Raghunuga Bhakti. Third wave is Bhava Bhakti. Bhava means emotions. And Srila Rupa Goswami goes into great detail analyzing different types of emotions, or categories of emotions, and different emotions within each subcategory, and different things that stimulate emotions. They're called vibhavas. I'm not going to get into that now because that's a topic for later on. And then finally, the fourth wave. This is just a summary of the whole book. The fourth wave is prema bhakti, or pure devotional service. So that's the Eastern section deals with just that. It's basically really a summary. Eastern section is a summary of what's going to go on later on in the book. And then the Southern section talks about the components of rasa. And that means bhava. Bhava is the different components of rasa. And within that, there's five different waves. I'm not going to mention the waves right now. They're the different types of bhavas. So then components, because bhavas are rasa samagri, that's a technical word, that which means the components of ras. Because ras means taste. So what is a taste? The taste is emotion. Ras doesn't mean relationship, it means taste of a relationship. It's like you say if something is sweet, it's a ras. Or if So it's important to pronounce that word properly. It's ras, not ras. Ras. Ras means referring to the rasa lila, dance. So ras means a taste. Sweet, sour, salty, pungent, like that. These are all different types. Is that interesting when I say that? I give the expression of pungent. Sour. Pungent. Anyway. It's important when you give class to be a little emotional like that. Understand what you're saying. So these are the different ingredients of ras. And then the western section, so we went to the southern, then we go to the west. Then we go into the primary bhakti rasas. And that's what you're all familiar with, which is shanta ras, dasya ras, sakya ras, vatsalya ras, and maturya ras. And then in the northern section, the final section, you go into the secondary rasas. And there's how many secondary rasas? Anyone
Seven.
Know? How many?
Seven.
Seven secondary rasas. And, you know, rasas like humor. But these secondary rasas flavor the primary rasas. It's like you have a vegetable. I'll give you an example. Let's say you have... let's give an example of a vegetable like cauliflower or something. I don't know why I picked that. But cauliflower has a particular taste. That's a primary ras. Mm-hmm. And then you spice it because in order to bring out the taste, in order to have more enjoyment from the cauliflower, you don't just eat the cauliflower. You put garam masala on it. So like in the conjugal ras, you have the garam masala of the anger, the mana, and that spices it up. You know, because in Radha and Krishna conjugal love affairs. Because if you didn't have these indirect rasas, then the conjugal ras would probably be something like swakya. You know, married. Radha and Krishna get married, and that's that's interesting. But not as interesting as when Radharani gets angry with Krishna and instructs her associates to beat him. I mean, that's much more interesting. And then Krishna has to come and bow down at a Manasarovara. He has to come down and bow down and just beg, please forgive me. Please, please forgive me. You know, there's God crying. So that's much more interesting. So you see, in that particular relationship, you're not only the man or the anger, but you see like compassion, karuna, which is one of the indirect rasas being manifest, and you see fear, maya, Krishna's fearful of Radharani. I mean, you see all these different indirect rasas manifest surrounding the actual direct rasa. So that, anyway, that's the northern section. Also in the northern section, you deal with something very technical called rasabhas. Rasabhas means when you have a mixture of these different rasas that may appear incompatible, but sometimes are compatible under certain circumstances. Like, you know, I'll give you an example. Like, if you have anger and compassion, it appears incompatible. And examples are given, sometimes they are compatible. And it's a whole science to be able to understand and identify, at least for those who are those who are philosophers, to be able to identify what is a bona fide description of Krishna's pastimes. And what is actually filled with rasa, the improper rasabhas, which Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would reject. For example, when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was present, he would have Swarup Damodar Goswami read any literatures that people published or people wrote before he would read them, and Swarup Damodar Goswami would examine them for rasabhas to see if that improper mixture of the rasas or improper description. So that's basically the outline of the whole nectar devotion. Then, after that, that's called the Grantha Vibhaga. Grantha Vibhaga means the divisions of the Grantha. Then after that, we're still dealing with the introduction. So, this is a summary of the introduction. So then, finally, in verse 11, there's that nutshell verse which I quoted before. Anyabhi lashita shunyam kyana karmana avatam anukul yena krishnanushilanam patrutamam, which gives the two different symptoms, two different categories of symptoms of pure devotional service. and the word for symptoms in Sanskrit is lakshana. I don't know, I guess it's just because of the time change. I'm not sick, it's just sometimes when the body undergoes time change, you get this mucus here. So lakshana means symptoms, and there's two types of symptoms. This is a technical word again. There's the swarup lakshana and the tashta lakshana. Swarup means basically those qualities that are direct qualities of something. Tatashta means like marginal or indirect qualities. Just like we're called Tatashta Shakti. Interesting way that our position is described in the Jiva Dharma. It's described like the borderline between the shore and the ocean. In other words, we can say that sometimes the borderline gets covered up if you get a high tide. Most of us are in the high tide stage right now. Covered up by Maya. So anyway, and sometimes it's uncovered. So that's Tatashta. Tatashta is the thin line that demarcates the spiritual from the material. However, according to the Vishnu Purana, Vishnu Shakti Parava Prokta, Shitrakyakitata Para, Vidyakarma Sanganyantratir Shakti Ishute, that we're actually of the superior potency. Vishnu Shakti Parava Prokta, that's the superior potency. Shitrakyakya, the living entity who is the Shitragya, or the knower of this body, Tatapara, is also transcendental. So we're of the same nature. We come from the Chitshakti also. We're spiritual, but we're tiny. You can't even see how tiny we are. So we're tiny, so we have a tendency to fall out of the fire and become for all intents and purposes, dead. Not really dead. The soul never dies. So anyway, so we have this Swarup Lakshana and Tathashta Lakshana. And the direct qualities of pure devotional service, according to this verse, Anabhi Lashita Shunyan Jnana Karma Anapitamanaku Yena Krishnanam Bhakti Uttama. The direct qualities are devotional service must be done in a way that pleases Krishna. In other words, it has to be done to please Krishna. Motivation is favorable, and that's Anukul Yena. Devotional service must be active, Anushilanam, and devotional service is for Krishna. Those are the three different qualities. So those are that's the Swarup Lakshana. And the Tathashta is actually several different things. One is free from any ulterior motive. Anya Abhilashita Shunyam. And the other one, yes. Anya Abhilashita Shunyam. And then and uninterrupted in any circumstance. And Jnana Karma and Avritam. Not covered by any desire for liberation or for any external, fruitive, material manifestation gain. And it's interesting, Srila Rupa Goswami goes into some detail here about some things that may be controversial that are not in the nectar of devotion. He says, sometimes one can do jnana or karma, in other words, attain knowledge or do activities that don't cover you. In other words, it's not a prohibition against doing certain rituals. Because according, Bhaktivinoda Thakur also talks about this in the Jiva Dharma, according to the society you're in, you shouldn't create a social disruption. Let's say if you're a society, there has to be a particular type of pinda. Let's say, for Indian society, you do pinda, like that. Even though devotees don't have to do that, we don't have to do that, because if you chant Hare Krishna and become a devotee, you liberate all your descendants as well as your ancestors, so many generations. Why do you have to do pinda? But you can do it, and you should do it, if it would create a social disruption. Let's say your family would think you're an absolute rascal, and they would actually look down upon devotional service, then you can do something like that. So it's not that jnana and karma necessarily cover pure devotional service. Sometimes, for external purposes, because we live in a society, we have to do certain things. Like you have to work to make a living. That's karma also. It's not you don't get a karmic reaction, but you have responsibilities within Varnashram. Only when you come to the platform of being an avaduta or something like that, like a babaji or babaji knee. ladies become babaji knees or something. I don't advise that. So only when you come to that platform can you become free of doing the external social customs. We should respect. And doing those external social customs, jnana and karma, they do not impede bhakti. Sometimes immature devotees think that they impede bhakti, but Rupa Goswami is very clear. They do not impede bhakti. But one should follow the social norms. Bhaktivinoda Thakur also talks about that. It's interesting that jnana and karma, one has to be careful, because certain times, if you have faith in this jnana and karma, it can impede bhakti. And the example given is if one gets too much into astrology. Because if you think, like Prabhupada would say, with the tip of his toe, Krishna can kick away millions of Rahu planets. So we find devotees. There's actually one devotee who wrote this wonderful book about, how astrology can destroy your life. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Have I sent that book to anyone? I have it on my computer. Did I ever send that book? No, I don't think I ever sent it to anyone. It's a very nice book, and it was written by a friend of mine. And she described the different times that people, devotees, would go to the astrologer and say to the astrologer, you know, what about my marriage? And the astrologer said, yeah, I can see you're going to get a divorce in a few days. And sometimes the astrologer would even say, you're going to meet a handsome young astrologer. Yeah. Today you're going to meet him. You know. And so anyway, so these are called self-fulfilling prophecies.
Yeah.
And so these astrologers were unethical. But still, let's say they were ethical and good astrologers and everything like that. If a devotee places too much faith in that and doesn't understand the principle that pure devotional service, which you can read about later on, that chanting the Lord's holy names, even Nama Bas chanting, destroys even the Prarabdha karma. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. That and the Harinam Chintamani. Anyone here read the Harinam Chintamani? Mm-hmm. Yeah. He describes that chanting, even Nama Bas, destroys the Prarabdha karma. And you find the astrologers, they'll generally argue the opposite because they want to make a living. That you have all this karma. Or I remember, just one funny story, before I joined the movement, I was living with some friends that didn't want me to join the movement. And they said, you can't join the movement because you have too much karma. You have to work out your karma. Because they didn't. What they were talking about is that my karma was basically taking care of them and maintaining them. I was paying all their bills, cooking for them, you know, and everything like that. Two friends, you know. And then I joined, and because they had no one to take care of them or pay their bills, they also joined the movement about a few days later. Because they didn't want to starve to death, and we had free prasadam in the temple. So, of course, I knew enough about the philosophy. When you chant, you don't worry about the karma. Prabhupada said, all the lines on your hand change. You know, whenever I do this, everyone looks at their hand. They change. Make that line longer. Get a tattoo artist to scratch in a longer line. So I can live longer. So therefore, that covers bhakti. Devotees should understand that. If you get too much into these things like astrology, you know, palmistry, then it can actually cover, keep you from reaching bhakti. Where devotees is just dependent on Krishna. I mean, if I do something that takes away my dependence on Krishna, as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says in his six teachings, everybody knows about his six teachings? To accept everything favorable, reject everything unfavorable. To be meek and humble, to have no interest other than the interest of the Lord, to understand the Lord is always protecting one and maintaining one. These are the two important principles, maintaining and protecting. This is mentioned in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Has anyone read that book? Some of you have. Then if we actually think that, you know, it's karma that's maintaining and protecting us or whatever, and I have to wear all these jewels on my hands, because that's a good business to be an astrologer. You say, you know, you gotta get a diamond, a sapphire, a ruby, and you know, here's my catalog. You know, for you, no profit, no profit. And so you find these devotees sometimes with all these different rings on their fingers. They can't even play the cartels anymore. There's so many rings on their fingers because. But you know, I would wear a ring, but I don't need it. But anyway, but not for that purpose. Not for that purpose. You know, if I had some deity remnants or something, I would wear it. But I just want to have faith in Krishna. You know, if Krishna wants to kill me, isn't it? Rakshamam. Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rakshamam. Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Pahimam. That's right from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So we have to be careful about those things that may impede our trust and faith in the process of bhakti. So this is Rupa Goswami's final, let's say, warning to us in the first, in the introduction of the Nectar of Devotion, or the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So I think we'll end there. So any questions about any of the points we made? Yeah.
I have a question about when it said that one who becomes devoted liberates the generations forward and back.
Yeah.
Does it work sideways? And what
yeah, sideways too.
What if you have a stepfather? What about him?
And if a devotee...
I have a stepdad.
No, if you pray for someone, you can liberate them. Liberation doesn't mean they go back to Godhead.
They have an opportunity.
They have an opportunity. They become free from karma. It's that, you know, we have this misunderstanding sometimes that, you know, liberation means everybody goes back to Godhead. They still have to love Krishna. You know, let's say they went to the spiritual world, they get pretty bored there. They wouldn't be happy and they'd be an impediment. I mean, I know my mother's liberated, but if she went to Krishna Loka, she just wouldn't fit in right now. So therefore they get an opportunity. Free from karma. That's what liberation means. Namabhas liberates you too. But it doesn't give you Shuddha Bhakti. To get Shuddha Bhakti, you have to chant with love of Krishna.
Krishna Das, what he's doing is kirtan. He's not Krishna Das,
he's
kirtan.
Hare Krishna. Do you want me to say something?
Oh, okay.
About that? I'll say something. You asked the question. Bhaktivinoda Thakur states, I believe it's the Jiva Dharma or Krishna Shikshamrita, that if one participates in a kirtan with a mayavadi, that his bhakti is destroyed or ruined or covered. So we have to be very careful. You know, if you hear the kirtans from these people, your bhakti can actually be diminished. Although, you know, we're attracted to the musical sounds. I mean, we like good music. I mean, like we listen to classical music, Bach, Beethoven, Handel, you know, like that. So we're attracted to good music. But if the music, what is it? Vaishnava Mukodgirnam Bhutam Harikatam Tam Shavana Naiva Kartamyam Sarputyushtiyatapayam. If you hear about Krishna from someone who's not Krishna conscious, particularly someone who is opposed to Krishna, I mean, you started me on this. But anyway, but he stated something about Krishna and he used a four-letter word when he was talking about Krishna. Wow. There's a recent interview with him. You know what a four-letter word is?
No.
One of the two of S or F, you know. And he used that in relationship to Krishna. He said, you can chant any of that S.
Wow.
Now, yeah, wow. So, anyway, he's not a vegetarian and everything like that. So what is the benefit? I mean, you like the music. I mean, he has some nice melodies. I've heard it. But the benefit is your bhakti will be diminished.
Why is he doing that?
Why is he doing that? Yeah, he's a follower of a different guru, and he feels that's his objective in life.
So he's thinking that he's following some spiritual path?
I've never asked him.
Okay.
So I don't know his internal motives, but this is Guru Nimkaroli Baba, who he follows. I'm not going to criticize the guru, because the guru is in Vrindavan and everything. But still, he doesn't accept that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We don't want to go or hear or participate in any sort of kirtan. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is very clear. It hurts one's bhakti, destroys, covers one's bhakti. I mean, this is in the Jiva Dharma. Now I remember where it is. It said covers one's bhakti.
So we need to be very careful who we hear from.
Yes. And that quote I just gave, Sarpo Chisti Yatapayam, it's like taking milk touched by the lips of a serpent. Sanatana Goswami quotes that from the Hari Bhakti Shudaya, that Vaishnava Mukod Gwinam Putam Harikatam, it's poisonous. It's like taking milk touched by the lips of a serpent. I mean, milk is nice, But if you it's the remnants of a serpent, it's not very good. It's just like the story for the Mahabharata, where Bhimsen was offered kheer. But inside that kheer was the poison. Of course, Bhimsen was powerful enough to digest the kheer with the poison, but we're not. If you're not Bhimsen spiritually, then be careful. All right, any other questions? Yeah.
When you were explaining the difference in between Vaidhi Bhakti and Rabba Nuga Bhakti,
yeah.
I was wondering, since Rabba Nuga Bhakti is something that's, you know, very advanced, what if in that stage your guru is not around to...
Mm-hmm. Then we have so many Siksha gurus. And that's also described in the Jiva Dharma. These two devotees, Vijay Kumar and Brajanath, they go to Jagannath Puri and they actually take shelter of a Siksha guru there who instructs them further in the aspects of Raghunuga and ultimately Bhava Bhakti and Prema Bhakti. So, we find someone in Prabhupada's line. It's not that we have to look outside. There are plenty of advanced devotees in Prabhupada's line who are qualified in that regard. And we can reveal in confidence the Dati Prajagrinati Guyam Akyati Prichati. It has to be confidential, obviously. It's not that you should read about it on Facebook the next day. That my disciple came and said she was a gopi. And I told her, no, you're just a cow. So, and with pictures of her and everything. With a cow head. We have just approach the Vaishnavas. Someone you have. We all have to have someone that we have faith in, or trust, or close relationships and friendships with. We need people like that in our movement. And all of us, you know, I need it. We all need it. When someone's isolated, then they can easily deviate from Krishna consciousness. So that's. Yeah, and ultimately we will all come to that platform where, and actually the Raghunuga platform is not super highly elevated, it's a medium platform. Because after that you get Bhava Bhakti and after that Prema Bhakti. It's something that we should aspire for. I would say within 20 or 30 years after chanting Hare Krishna, we should definitely aspire for that. It's not that, you know, or maybe it's something for next life. But of course we have to not just chant Hare Krishna without attention. We should chant Hare Krishna with great love and have good sadhana. And then certainly Krishna will reveal that to us. You know, our movement is meant for spiritual advancement like that. Yes?
Hare Krishna, I just have a quick practical question. You were mentioning how devotees get into the jyotish and stuff like that. So I'm wondering, how come there's so much fuss about, you know, when people want to get married, they get the chalice and, you know, match them up. If sometimes a person doesn't even have enough piety to get a competitive partner, you know? So
yeah.
They're meant to have, like, an incompetitive partner. Or the marriage really depends on how much you surrender to Krishna. So why is there so much fuss about that?
Well, I think in arranging marriages, I wouldn't make a big fuss about it. It can be useful because we try to give people as compatible a partner as possible. And, you know, sometimes it's not possible. And, of course, I've also seen that, you know, we had marriages that were 95% compatible and they couldn't get along afterwards. So it's how many expert astrologers do we have nowadays? It's not that you just plug it into your computer like people do nowadays and they just have a whole printout. Wow. It's such a complex science that you actually have to be born in a family of astrologers and learn it basically from your very birth. It's like Ayurveda. You have these people in India who go to the Ayurvedic college and they think they know Ayurveda. But it's family. Just like I have one friend who's a very good Ayurvedic physician in Vrindavan, and he's multi-generational. And he's very good. So, first of all, most astrologers are really not that good. Really not that good. There are some good astrologers. And secondly, we have to try our best to get some sort of compatibility. It should be examined to a certain, and taken into consideration. It's not that we want to arrange marriages so people are miserable so they become detached from the material world. Although Prabhupada's marriage was arranged like that. I don't know who did his astrology. but I probably wouldn't use that astrologer again. So, you know, anyway. In any marriages, there are going to be challenges. And we just take it as an it's not that we should have divorce either. We just take it as an opportunity, wherever there's challenges in relationships, to advance further in devotional service. And if someone learns to be empathic and loving, I believe that any marriage can work. I mean, even Ravana and his wife have worked out pretty well. I mean, it's just like, you just have to learn relationships. I mean, it's not that they may not be the best of friends, but it can work. It can work. So, but I think astrology, that would be the one time I might consider, or not for me, of course, obviously. So yes. One time, dealing with other people, you know, we might recommend that, you know, astrologers should be consulted. And take it into consideration. I mean, for example, we do consult the weather forecast. And it's not that we stop. If someone says it's raining today, okay, let's stay inside and just chant. We used to go out, but we take an umbrella with us. So it can help you, if you have a good astrologer, to understand what precautions you need to make. But you don't go crazy about it. You don't go crazy dealing with the whole thing. Okay. Another question?
Guru Maharaj, actually, I'm also an astrologer.
Oh.
And I would like to tell you that any good astrologer, even the best astrologer under the sun, whatever prediction he makes, it cannot be correct more than 60%.
60%?
Yeah. That is the best astrologer.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty dangerous.
Every match an astrologer makes, like, you know, I may say, okay, this match is compatible, but I have seen personally that somebody else, the same clients have gone to some other astrologer.
And they say the opposite.
That astrologer has said, yeah, you can go ahead.
Yeah.
Whereas I have said no.
Yeah. So it's like playing Russian roulette. You know what Russian roulette is? You have a gun and you have like six chambers and you put four bullets in there and you just spin it. And you just take a chance you didn't get the bullet in your head. So, I mean, the point is to be Krishna conscious. And then we can deal with these situations. And we all end up with situations that are very difficult to deal with. Whether it's marriage or, you know, sometimes, you know, I end up with disciples that are very difficult to deal with. And I say, you know, I did your astrology beforehand. You're supposed to be a nice disciple. And then, you know, they end up like Ravana. So it's just something you got to live with. I think we have to end now because we have a full day and it's after 8. And we had a lot of people. I think we had a lot of people watching. Let's see how many people watched us today. My